Dr. William Luther Pierce. The year 2000. Horror in Rhodesia.
Hello. Last week, we talked about the plight of the farmers of Rhodesia, now known as Zimbabwe. Last week, I reported to you that more than 800 white farms had been invaded and illegally taken over by black squatters, with the blessing of the government of black dictator Robert Mugabe. This week, the number of white farm families pushed off their land by black gangs has risen to more than 1,100, and the violence of the farm seizures is growing. Before, the blacks used knives and clubs. Now, they're using firearms. I also reported to you last week that I had seen on CNN Headline News a one-minute news segment about the dispossession of Rhodesian farmers. That was on Tuesday of last week. Then on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, I saw additional one-minute segments. Brief news segments also have begun appearing on other channels, but they're all brief and low-key, all understated and unemotional, conveying no sense of urgency or tragedy. I guess that the excuse of the media people for the sparse news about Rhodesia is that the saturation news coverage of the Elian Gonzalez soap opera is keeping all of the journalists too busy for anything else. It's not that news isn't available. There are journalists stationed in Salisbury, now known as Harare. They file reports on the internet every day. Anyone who is interested can read dozens of current reports about events in Rhodesia, detailed reports. Most of these reports are very urgent, very tragic, very gripping, quite different from the very brief and bland reports now beginning to appear on network news programs. One gets the distinct impression that the media bosses don't want the real news from Rhodesia to show up where the couch potatoes might stumble across it. That sort of news wouldn't be good for race relations in America, would it? It might alarm white Americans. It might make some of them think about what's in store for America if the present process of multiculturalization continues. Well, let me try to stimulate some thinking. I'll read to you from one of these reports on the internet. This is about what happened on Wednesday of last week at the Lonely Park Farm, 20 miles east of Salisbury. The Lonely Park Farm belongs to Paul and Liz Retzloff. During the day, a truckload of blacks stopped at the driveway to their farm and attacked one of their black farm workers who was mowing the grass with a sickle. They took his sickle away from him and then hacked him up with it. Later in the day, about 70 blacks gathered outside the gate of the farm and began chanting and shouting threats. The Retzloffs called the police, but the police refused to come. In Rhodesia these days, the police are all black. Their boss, Robert Mugabe, won't let the police interfere in these attacks on white farms. Rhodesian farmers have erected high-voltage electric fences and gates around their farmhouses since the trouble with the blacks began, and usually that's enough to keep the blacks out. At the Lonely Park Farm, it wasn't enough. After dark, the blacks drank and chanted until they had worked up their courage, and then they crashed through the electrified gate with a truck. The Retzloffs heard them howling for blood as they came up the driveway toward the house. In the darkness, they fled to an adjacent cottage and barricaded themselves inside. Liz Retzloff reported, "When you hear them coming, your stomach just goes into a knot and you feel defenseless." She and her husband and son crouched behind the cottage door and listened to the rampaging blacks wrecking their house, smashing windows, breaking furniture, stealing everything they could carry away. In the darkness, they used a shortwave radio in the cottage to call their neighbors for help. Then the blacks stormed toward the cottage, howling war cries and brandishing axes, knives, clubs, and iron bars. They were smashing down the door to the cottage when they heard the Retzloff's neighbors arriving by truck. Even as the black mob fled into the night, they opened fire with assault rifles on the rescuers. Now, the Retzloffs are cleaning up the broken glass and smashed furniture and attempting to repair their wrecked home. And they are living in terror, afraid to sleep at night, never knowing when another mob of blacks will attack, and also knowing that they can expect no protection at all from the police. Furthermore, if they defend themselves forcefully and kill their attackers, then the police will come to arrest them. But the Retzloffs have nowhere else to go, and they don't know what they can do except rebuild and hang on. Paul Retzloff told a reporter, and I quote, "We were born and bred here. My grandchildren are fifth-generation Zimbabweans. Of course, we aren't going to leave. We started with nothing, and we built this farm. There's no way we can just abandon it," end quote. Imagine yourself in the Retzloff's situation. Imagine the hopelessness, the despair. Of course, in the end, they will be forced to abandon their farm, or they will be murdered. Things will not get better in Zimbabwe. They can only become worse. It's not just that the black dictator of Zimbabwe has promised his followers that he will give the farms of the whites to them and will be in serious trouble if he doesn't keep his promise. It's that a process of general deterioration began when the white Rhodesians turned the country they built over to black rule in 1979, and that process is accelerating. It will not be stopped. Unemployment is up and rising. Inflation is up and rising. Crime is up and rising. The HIV infection rate among blacks is 20% and rising. Production is down and falling. As conditions in Zimbabwe become worse, the blacks will blame the whites for it, just as in America they blame whites for all of their problems, and the demand for confiscation of white property will grow. Mugabe understands that as more whites are driven out, the economy will collapse, but he is to a certain extent a captive of his own policies. If he tries to pull back from the brink, other blacks, who have even less concern for the long-term consequences of continuing the seizure of white farms, will force the issue. A black who is now one of Mugabe's supporters, but who could become a rival, is Chinhirai Hunsbai. He heads the largest group of former black terrorists, the National Liberation War Veterans Association, and he is pushing hard for a full-scale ethnic cleansing of Zimbabwe. Every time he speaks to the press, he calls for speeding up the process of confiscation of land from the white farmers. "The land has been left in their hands too long," he told reporters in Salisbury last week. This sort of encouragement from their leaders, together with the lack of any restraint applied by Britain or the United Nations, has encouraged the black mobs who are seizing the white farms. Last weekend, they murdered a white farmer just 50 miles from the Retzloff farm. Black squatters invaded the farm of David Stevens, 75 miles east of Salisbury. They abducted Stevens, a father of four, including two-year-old twins, and five of his neighbors who had come to his rescue when he radioed for help. Stevens, considered a flaming liberal by his neighbors, had been determined to maintain good race relations with his black workers. He always distributed 10% of the gross earnings of his farm to his black workers over and above their salaries, and he took a personal interest in their problems. When a mob of Mugabe supporters, so-called war veterans, showed up at his farm last Saturday and began attacking his black workers with machetes, Stevens tried to protect them. He tried to reason with the mob. Just as his neighbors drove up to help him, the blacks handcuffed Stevens and threw him into the back of his own car and drove off with him. 30 other veterans followed in a bus belonging to a Christian missionary station. The Christian missionaries in Rhodesia generally have sided with the blacks against the whites. Stevens' neighbors followed in their own car until the blacks in the mission bus began shooting at them. Then the white farmers sought refuge in a police station. The blacks followed them into the police station and seized them, while the black policemen in the station refused to intervene in any way. The blacks then drove Stevens and his neighbors, all handcuffed, into the bush and began beating and torturing them. The bones in their hands were broken with iron rods. Their bodies were whipped with automotive fan belts. Their feet were burned with cigarettes. They were savagely beaten with clubs. Then the blacks stood David Stevens beside the road and killed him with shotgun blasts to his head and back. One of the neighbors, John Osborne, who was abducted and tortured with him, described the ordeal from his hospital bed. All of his neighbors are convinced that Stevens was singled out for killing, not despite his good relations with his black workers, but because of them. Thank God for that. After the killing, the black mob returned to Stevens' farm and wrecked his farmhouse and burned the homes of his black workers. 3 days later, that's last Tuesday, another white farmer, cattle rancher Martin Olds, was murdered on his farm near Bulawayo. And of course, you haven't heard about any of this beyond a dispassionate news report here and there that another white farmer has been killed. A report without details, without anything to make it seem real. Because, remember, the media bosses are too busy with Elian Gonzalez to spend much time on faraway Rhodesia. As economic conditions continue to worsen, the pressure for seizing even more white farms will increase. And the more white farms seized, the worse economic conditions will become. The first thing the blacks do when they take over a white farm is Africanize it. Even though the white Rhodesians have had black workers on their farms for more than a century, the blacks seem to have learned nothing from the experience. They are not able or willing to change from the black way of farming to the white way. The black way is a very primitive style of subsistence farming. When a mob of blacks take over a white farm, they wreck the farmhouse, subdivide what was an efficient farm into inefficient plots, and then quickly run it into the ground. They fail to maintain the farm machinery properly, and it soon stops working. They eat the breeding stock. They wear out the land. Grassley Farm, 130 miles from Salisbury, once was the most productive dairy farm in Rhodesia. Its owner, Ben Harding, employed 100 black workers on his 2,400 acres. When the blacks seized Grassley Farm, the first thing they did was slaughter the most productive dairy cow on the farm. They ate her for their Christmas feast. Then they tore up the irrigation system to make kitchen implements. Today, weeds grow through the ruins of the farmhouse, and the burned-out wrecks of cars litter what was once the garden. 20 blacks scratch out a bare living amid the dereliction and decay. Surrounding them are tracts of untended, weed-grown land and vandalized storehouses reduced to empty shells. Despite the brave words of the Retzlaffs and other white farmers who expressed their determination to stay on their farms, most of them can see the writing on the wall. About 20,000 of the 75,000 whites remaining in Rhodesia are entitled to claim British citizenship, and thousands of them are rushing now to renew their passports. The problem is that the British government doesn't want them. If they move to Britain, they are hardly likely to be supporters of the Blair government. Instead, they undoubtedly will be staunch opponents of all of Tony Blair's very progressive programs for integrating the United Kingdom into the New World Order. It's not that Blair and his government don't want more immigrants. Oh, my goodness, no, they love immigrants. It's just that the Rhodesian farmers are the wrong color. Some of them, having been exposed for so long to the racial realities of Africa, may even be racists. Therefore, the Blair government is not at all happy about the prospect of their coming to Britain. And as for the 55,000 or so white Rhodesians who are not entitled to come to Britain, don't even mention them. There's no chance at all that they will be allowed in, even as refugees. Where will they go? That's not Tony Blair's problem, is it? It's their problem. Tony Blair doesn't even want to hear about it. And for the most part, the controlled media in Britain are helping him not hear about it by not reporting on events in Zimbabwe any more than they absolutely must. Britain's mincing, prancing, smirking little prime minister, who was one of the most bloodthirsty advocates of the bombing of Belgrade and protest against Serbia's program of ethnic cleansing in its Kosovo province, is absolutely determined to ignore the ethnic cleansing now occurring in Rhodesia. When the Serbs were putting down a terrorist insurrection by the KLA in Kosovo province a year ago, Tony Blair was filled with righteous indignation. The little man's eyes flashed as he announced to the world that ethnic cleansing would not be tolerated. And it's just about the same story in the United States. Do you remember the preaching that Mr. Clinton and his kosher crew in Washington gave to us about Serbia last year? Serbian President Slobodan Milosevic was painted as a monster, a war criminal, for unleashing his army and his police on the KLA and giving rough treatment to Albanians in Kosovo suspected of collaborating with the KLA. Have you heard Mr. Clinton say anything harsh about Robert Mugabe? Have you heard the little Jewish troll in charge of his State Department, Madeleine Albright, speak out against the ethnic cleansing going on in Zimbabwe? Have you heard her call for Mugabe to be tried as a war criminal? Of course not. And it's quite plain that the refusal of Western governments to criticize him has emboldened Mugabe. He sees the silence of Blair and Clinton as a green light to do whatever he wants to do to the white minority in Zimbabwe. The day after the murder of David Stevens and the beating and torture of his neighbors, Mugabe announced publicly, specifically in response to complaints from other whites about his government's failure to take action against the murderers, and I quote, "We warned the white farmers. We cannot protect you if you provoke the war veterans. You must expect the consequences." Now, if that is not a call to further ethnic cleansing by his followers, I don't know what is. And so far, neither Mr. Blair nor Mr. Clinton has said a word. Mrs. Albright has not waddled in front of the cameras and announced that the civilized world will not tolerate any more ethnic cleansing. I should tell you now that I have nothing against ethnic cleansing in principle. It is a natural sort of thing which serves a useful purpose. I am looking forward to a massive and thorough ethnic cleansing of America and of Europe. I am planning for it. I am working toward it. I dream about it. And it is a fact that neither Mr. Blair nor Mr. Clinton has anything against ethnic cleansing in principle either. The two differences between them and me in this matter are, first, that I will tell you honestly what I think about it, and they will not. And second, I am in favor of ethnic cleansing only when it is in the interest of my people, when it serves to protect or purify them, and against it when it harms my people. And Mr. Clinton and Mr. Blair are for it or against it according to whether or not it serves the interest of the people who pay them and protect them and keep them in office. In this regard, They do not differ at all from their predecessors in office during the last great wave of ethnic cleansing which affected our people, namely that which took place in Europe 55 years ago. Franklin Roosevelt in the United States and Winston Churchill in Britain both pretended horror and outrage that the German people should dare to attempt to ethnically cleanse Germany of its Jewish infestation. But they themselves drafted post-war plans for ethnically cleansing large parts of Europe of Germans. Roosevelt went to his reward in hell before the plans could be carried out, but his successor, Harry Truman, cheerfully implemented them. The Jew-serving politicians of Britain and America also were not at all put off when their patrons implemented what amounted to a massive ethnic cleansing program in reverse in Poland, slaughtering 25,000 of Poland's intellectual, social, and military elite in order to punish Poland for its traditional opposition to Jewish subversion and also to make that country more amenable to Marxist rule. The British and American politicians simply winked, blamed it on the Germans, and remained allies of those who had done the slaughtering. The ethnic cleansing of the white farmers of Rhodesia doesn't really serve the purpose of the Jews or of the politicians in Britain and America. They already had destroyed Rhodesia effectively in 1979, and Mugabe is simply making it more obvious. The killing and dispossession of white farmers going on now is more of a nuisance and embarrassment to the Jews and politicians than anything else. They would prefer that it proceed quietly without attracting public notice. For us, it is another major disaster in a long series of major disasters. The Rhodesians represent the best elements of our race. We really should learn something from the difference in the way the media, which is to say the Jews, have responded to the ethnic cleansing going on in Rhodesia today and to the ethnic cleansing in Serbia a year ago. The Jews really were determined to wreck Serbia, to force the Serbs into line, to make them accept the New World Order. And so they reported the cleansing of Kosovo with emotion, with detail designed to rouse the emotions of viewers against the Serbs. I'm sure that you can remember that. It was only a year ago. Compare that with the coverage of the murder and expropriation of white farmers by mobs of black savages in Rhodesia today. The difference is like that between day and night. And really, Elian Gonzalez has nothing to do with it. The difference is in the attitudes of the media bosses, of the Jews. They don't want us to get excited about the Rhodesian farmers. It doesn't serve their interest for us to get excited and agitated about whites being murdered by blacks. To the contrary, it might interfere with their racial plan for America. If ever there was a compelling reason for us to take back our mass media, if ever there was a compelling reason for us to do whatever is necessary to get our mass media out of the hands of the Jews, the ethnic cleansing in Rhodesia is it. If you have any sense of racial consciousness, any sense of outrage over what is happening now in Rhodesia, join me in this effort. Thanks for being with me again today.